And we're on.
Welcome to the End of Seeking podcast with Imogen and Martin. And we're on episode 14. We took a couple of weeks off. Well, 1 week off, actually.
Well, we nearly took this week off as well, because I'm not quite sure I'm going to get through this without coughing a lung.
What is it? Hocking a lung.
Hocking a lung. Actually, even maybe, wait. Yeah.
Me too.
Get it out. Yeah, we've both been sick for a week or more. Mm-hmm. But we're on the tail end, so that's all right. I don't want to miss another week.
No. So, we're talking just then. About the sort of power of sacrifice.
Yeah. So I wrote this down. It came to me this week, just this idea. So the power of sacrifice, of giving things up, quitting habits, letting go of that which no longer serves us, creating the space, uncrowding oneself from time-consuming pablum, which I'll touch on, kenosis. What I was going to say before we came on air was it's worth talking about those things that are actually pertinent, meaningful, and present in our lives. Mm-hmm. And for me, this week or more, I've been aware that I've just been consuming a little bit more crap than I...
Me too.
Than I have.
Something about being sick that sort of lends itself quite well for... consumption. There's not much energy for much else.
Yeah. So I'm like on YouTube or something and I'm watching. And it's not like I don't watch a lot of things like we don't even have a television. No. So we don't watch television, and which is great. But and for years, actually, I can't remember the last time we had. I mean, the last place we lived, there was one, but it wasn't connected to anything. So we just project the odd movie onto it. But I don't go in for consuming a lot of media, although, you know, I like YouTube and I like listening to podcasts and conversations and various things. And what I was noticing the last couple of weeks is that it's not that I don't get the things I want done if I'm, say, watching more YouTube, more long forms, stuff like that. But I start to feel a little more crowded in myself and a little bit, like I haven't got the room to, or the space to be at peace with the things that I am choosing to engage with.
I mean, I think for a lot of people, they consume things as a way of avoiding their own inner silence. But of course, for you and I, that is often our primary focal point.
I like that.
Anyway.
I like the quietness. I like that.
And so actually consuming is a bit of a distraction for that. But for most people... you know, and I've talked to various people about this over the years, but actually that quietness is something to be avoided. And so consumption is a beautiful way of, filling up that space.
Yeah, I miss it and I feel a little more, you know, edgy or something if I'm just too full up. And for me, it shows up a lot of the times at night. You know, I'll get into, you know, I generally stay up a bit later than you do.
Yes.
I'll throw on,
night owl.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll be watching or listening or something. But I become aware that, you know, it's keeping me up where I'll go, the next thing. There's the next video and I'll watch, this conversation or that, whatever it is. And it'll keep me engaged and then I'll be up an extra hour or two or whatever, and so I'll go to bed later and that's fine, but I'm not that's fresh in the morning then. And I don't know. I think it's about, for me, I like to remain spacious. I don't like to fill up my hours with just stuff for the sake of it. And of course, we're in the golden age of, you know, content and endless ways to consume media. And it's very easy to have very engaged, very noisy, very distracted day. And, you know, there's certain things that we have to do, that we have to take care of. And I find that, yeah, I start to get crowded. And then the things I really want to do, the productive things, the creative things that I want to do, I find that I can feel the squeeze. I can feel like the lack of space for them. And then I go, oh, why am I feel so, you know, off about this stuff? And I go, oh, I'm just crowded. I've got too much, too many things. I'm consuming too many things, filling myself with too many things. And so then comes the power of sacrifice, which I really love. And the ability to drop things, to notice and release, to notice and return, to sacrifice that which no longer serves you. And, you know, it happens on a daily thing. You know, what am I consuming? What am I using to maybe distract from?
Yeah, it's not about what you say is important to you. It's about actually what you're spending your time, your focus, your energy pointed towards.
Yeah.
You said something interesting there, you know, the filling of the well. And for some, filling of the well might look like, and sometimes it does as well, look like literal sort of consuming or filling the well in that sense. But it's interesting, I was thinking about this yesterday a lot, the life of the mystic. And actually, for the life of the mystic, the filling of the well is in silence.
Silence.
That is where the well is filled.
Yeah.
In the silence of being. And so if you're foregoing that well filling for a different kind of well filling, there's where I think you get that sense of the need to sacrifice. It can't be both. There's only a finite amount of time in the day.
Well, there's a real, I think for me, it's a real gift when I notice that, oh, I'm filling myself with distractions. And I'm engaging things that aren't terribly useful to me, but there's a certain hook. And it reminds me of one of Pema Chodron's core teachings. One of them is Shempa, which is getting hooked. You know, she talks about getting hooked, and that leads us down all sorts of avenues of engagement that take us away from our silent core. But the other big one is Dunzi, which she calls, distractions. And they can be momentary distractions. Oh, I'm just distracted by, picked up this thing now and I'm looking at it for 5 minutes, I'm distracted. To great distractions in life, you know, doing things and engaging in things that serve no purpose other than to distract you from what your core orientation should be or wants to be. And as you say, it's not what you say, it's what you do. It's you can tell where you're oriented by how you fill your time, how you engage things. But so I'm aware, very much aware of the sort of the Dunzi nature of of the modern age that we're in, actually, you know, how many screens does everyone have? I mean, I've got four that I can think of, you know, I've got my laptop, my iPad, my iPhone, I've got a Kindle as well. You know, it's just screens. And there's always something to feed one's dunsy, get something to distract with. And it's, I'm mindful, trying to be mindful about, you know, how you feel when you're engaged in a distraction.
Yeah.
That you can identify as a distraction.
And sometimes it's like those distractions, you don't even recognize them as such until after the fact. Like, yeah. It's such a split second thing that you pick up something without that sort of, let's say, mindful, conscious awareness of why you're picking something up. And often it's there's a little bit of a discomfort feeling that you're not wanting to even go there. And so that's where often distraction comes in, I would say, so readily, is where we're not wanting to feel what we're feeling. And so
you want to change your state or bring a distraction and take your mind off it.
Get a little hit of serotonin or whatever.
Yeah, dopamine.
Dopamine,
yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And so it often, for me, it's all predicated on the slowing down.
Mm.
That mindfulness is a description of slowing down. Mm. We race through life, and before we know it, we've picked up this and that and the other.
We're hooked.
Yeah. And it's only when there's an aha moment of recognizing, oh, I'm completely into this thing and it's completely consuming me. And it's a distraction. But often we don't see it coming because we're racing through life without that slowing down, without that mindful awareness of what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Yeah. And of course, this age we're in is unlike any there's ever been. The you know, for me, what I'm really talking about mostly is this sort of digital media consumption. That's so readily available to everyone else, especially since smartphones came around. There's never been so many opportunities to just pick up and, as you say, get a little dopamine hit and get another dopamine hit and just endless scrolling, whatever, Twitter, Facebook, news, Instagram, you know, these things. And here's the trouble. It's not quite our fault. It's these algorithms are designed to engage us and keep us hooked. So it's not just a case of we fall for a sort of a benign ambient, you know, engagement with something. You know, you're not going to get hooked and distracted by nature. You know, nature's going to be, you know, you head out and go for a walk in the woods or by the sea or whatever. There's not much risk of that kind of pathological hookedness or distraction you're going to get. And that's going to be kind of mostly quite nourishing.
Well, it's interesting you use the word nourishing there, because that's exactly what I was about to, that, as you were speaking there, that was the measurement I was feeling into, was the depletion versus the nourishment energetically. It's like when you spend a lot of time engaged in these sort of current day media solutions, if you feel into your body after spending hours, you know, in front of a screen, there's not a lot of nourishment that's felt there, certainly for me anyway.
No.
Versus you know, as the example you're using, standing out in nature, being with nature, looking out at the ocean, being surrounded by trees, whatever it is. If you compare that, there is a feeling of nourishment, a nourishment to the body. And I think for me, there's the indicator. It's like, do I feel depleted energy or do I feel nourished, uplifted?
And there's a wiredness, isn't there? I mean, we've talked to you before and about the sort of method of notice and return in regard to meditation, and also in regard, in regard to life. Actually, a technique of meditation is, sit in the quietness of your own awareness, your own being, and invariably the mind will get caught up in some train of thinking, which is natural. It's monkey mind that's going to go off. And until you notice that's happened, you can't do anything about it, because if you're caught up in it by definition. So the secret is not to hold the mind in some concentrated way, force the mind to keep still, because that's not going to work. But the notice, I'm caught up in some thought, and then return to your point of rest, point of awareness, point of being, or release, another way, notice and release. And, I've been on my phone sometimes, I'm like on Instagram or something, and I'm just on Reels, and I'm watching like this funny thing after another or something, scrolling. And at some point I go, it's almost like I come out from underwater and go, gosh, I've been sitting here for ages, just bloody, and it's fun while it lasts, it's not everything in balance. But it's interesting to see how the mind operates and gets absorbed into something. But certainly, again, that the fact that these platforms and this digital media environment, it's designed to capture our attention, to keep our attention. So we have to be, extra mindful that we're going to approach these things with awareness. Aware that there is, it is easy to get hooked. And so what's the problem with that? I think the problem is that we lose ourselves in it. We don't give, what are we here about? You and I, we're bringing this podcast. It's about the spiritual paths, about spiritual awakening, about rediscovering our true nature. And presumably those who listen to this are engaged to some degree in that effort of remembrance. And so we're commenting on what are these things that are antithetical to that endeavor. And, even before this digital media environment, smartphones that we seem to find ourselves on more than we care to, life is already full of distractions. And it's so easy, as a seeker, to be distracted and to allow one's energy and attention to fall into distractions and forget the fullness of this moment, the peace of consciousness in the present moment.
Yeah, it's like those distractions are a very short-term gain. They're in, I can't think of the phrase, but it's like you're switching out something very precious for something that is very minor.
What did I liked? Reminds me of a thing. Brahmananda Saraswati, who was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's master. He was a great Swami from North India. He was the Brahmacharya of North India, great, you know, sage, lived most of his life in the forest. But he said something like, if you in this lifetime, having discovered that such a thing as enlightenment is possible, if you don't engage in that and achieve that, you've traded diamonds for cabbages.
That was it. That was the quote that I was trying to recall.
Yeah, so trading diamonds for cabbages.
Yeah, and so I think this is why the short-term view of it can sometimes feel like a sacrifice.
Right.
The short-term view of, oh, but I want to watch my program, or I want to do my thing, or I want to go out with my friends, or I want to, whatever it is that's the distraction. And it might be a short-term sort of excitement or joy or hit, dopamine hit. But what you're, in doing that, what you're trading off is the perpetual cycle of suffering that is experienced when one doesn't know their true nature.
Yeah, and you know that therein lies the roots of addictive behavior, really, and dependency. So if you're getting your hits of pleasure and well-being from outside, you soon become dependent on that. They're temporary, they're short-lived by nature, and you have to go seeking them. And so that effort of seeking some pleasure, some sense of well-being, some peace, something, a little hit of dopamine, by continually seeking outside, you're going to be dependent upon that. And you're not going to be at peace until you have them. You're going to condition yourself into not being at peace. And so the opposite of that, and that's the sacrifice, to sacrifice those outward stimulants, pleasures, you then discover, oh, the intrinsic well-being, the intrinsic peace, the joy. I think it's in the Dhammapada, which is a collection of the Buddha's aphorisms. He said something like, sacrifice pleasure for bliss.
Mm. Yeah, but it's you know, I call them shiny objects. It's like we have this fascination with shiny objects, temporary, shiny, loud objects. And the quest of spiritual awakening is much quieter. It's much more, it's all pervading. It's not about spiritual peak experiences and highs. I think actually they can be just as much distractions for certain people if that's the sort of the trajectory you find yourself on, that can be just as much of a distraction actually. Spiritual experiences can be a great distraction.
Yeah. If it's time bound, it's not it.
Yeah, if it comes and goes, it doesn't amount to a hill of beans.
Yeah.
And so true awakening for me is a sobering up. It's a sobering of it to your nature.
Yeah.
It's like a bucket of water being thrown over you, and it's a sobering of that. It's like, oh,
yeah, I
understand the nature of experience, the nature of all that is coming and going. And again, it's not a rejection of that experience, but it is,
it's not a dependency on that phenomena of coming and going and trying to find whether we're aware of that effort of trying to find permanence in impermanent objects.
Exactly. And so there's the sacrifice. The sacrifice is the impermanent objects. sacrificing those impermanent temporary objects in favor of the ubiquitous, ineffable, but not as exciting ground of being.
Actually, you've just elucidated there and articulated is the formula that was handed to us in, I think it's the New Testament, where it says the formula, seek first the kingdom of heaven, seek first the kingdom of God, and then all these things will be handed to you.
Exactly.
So in order to, I think it was in response to someone who was worried about their clothes and their food, and so it was in the context of you know, Jesus the teacher saying, don't worry about the things, the objects that you need, and don't seek them. Seek first the kingdom, meaning seek first your own consciousness, your own united, universal, all-pervading being. Go there, go within, go with the kingdom of God is within, of course. And so that first thing seems to be a rejection. No, seek the kingdom
mm-hmm.
within. And so the principle seems, oh, well, you're rejecting the world. No, because once you've gone there, once you've established the kingdom, then all the objects that you've wanted to enjoy and to own or inhabit, they'll come.
That's the way it goes.
But you've got to seek the highest first.
Yeah.
And then it'll take care of everything else.
Yeah, and so there's the sacrifice of all the objects.
Yeah.
But in the sacrifice doesn't mean objects disappear. It means that you're putting higher the discovery of your nature.
Well, you sacrifice the temporary for the timeless. But then, ironically, the temporary continue to be come through, come and go, be enjoyed, but they're not. You're not. You don't have to seek them then, and you're not dependent on them, and you're not identified with them, and they don't own your ass because you're, you know, because you can't, because you don't know who and what you are. Seek first the kingdom. Yeah. And so that's the formula, you know, it really is it seems to be the formula of the unfoldment of awakening in many cases, at least, is that, you know, most people who are only aware of the dualistic relative nature of life, the objects, and are unaware of their awareness nature. And so the discovery of that awareness nature is the primary concern. And it seems to be a rejection of the relative, but it's a step. You have to rediscover the...
In the fullness of time, all is included.
Yeah. So, you know, a turn inwards from the realm of sense objects into the source. Yeah. And then
recognition...
Then the source then is recognized exactly. That it actually embraces and includes... All the relativity as well.
Well, the sense objects are that source.
Exactly, right.
And that's the sort of the unity recognition.
But the sacrifice is, in a sense, you do have to turn your back on it, in a sense, to go within. Because in a sense, by turning within, by turning to that source, you're in a sense turning your back on all these objects, all these things. And that's the path of seeking. That's perfectly the natural path. But once that's established, everything else is included. Yeah. So the sacrifice pays off, but it's a leap of faith. You have to let go. I like that. You know, there's this story about the monkey and the banana in the tree. And so what they do in wherever, I guess some tribal region, to capture monkeys, the hunter will find a crook in a tree, you know, a hole in the tree, and cover it with mud, and put a banana in the crook, and then cover it, like make it like a wall of mud, and it goes hard, and then carves a little hole into that a thing so that a monkey's hand, if it pinches itself, can go, it'll smell the banana and put its hand into this hole and grab the banana. But once it's grabbed the banana, the hole's too tight, the monkey can't get out. It's caught up against this sort of mud wall. And the hunters just walk up to the monkey then and capture the monkey. But if only the monkey would let go of the banana, he'd be free. But it's his own grasping onto this banana that keeps him captured. And I think that's really interesting. All it takes is just to release and then freedom. Sacrifice the
lower the lesser for the higher.
Yeah, that's exactly. And we're faced with that all the time. I love that, the power of sacrifice, you know, that we can't hold on to everything all the time. And often we're just faced with that dilemma. Do I sacrifice this thing that I have for a higher reality? And something, it has to go. It'll have to be dropped. It's okay, you don't have to, but there's a trade-off. A sacrifice is always required in the process of growth.
Yeah. A letting go. A surrender. And sometimes, well, often what we're surrendering is something we don't want to surrender.
Right.
This is why, you know, it sort of makes me smile to myself a little bit, you know. Those sort of touting the spiritual awakening path as sweetness and light. Because
you'll get everything you want.
I'm like, no, gosh.
Well, it's spiritual materialism, isn't it?
I get why that would be touted, but it's such a path of surrender.
Yeah.
When you get into the depths of it and the outer rings of it, it seems a lot superficially about, you know, getting all the good stuff of life. But in the heart, when you find yourself drawn into the depths and the heart of this journey, it becomes much, much, much more about surrender than anything else.
Yeah, and sacrifice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tweeted something like, it's not that you have to give up your... give up the attachment. Okay, let me see if I get this right. It's not that you have to give up the objects of your attachment, but you have to give up your attachment to objects.
Exactly.
So, you know, in some sense, the sacrifice, the surrender, the giving up of attachment doesn't necessarily mean the thing you're gonna go without.
Yeah.
But you have to let go of them. And again, it's like seek first the kingdom and then all things will be added unto you. So that's the process. But if you keep seeking the objects, you'll never get the kingdom and you probably won't get the objects either. So, you know, give it up.
Yeah.
Make the sacrifice, surrender.
It's in that sacrifice, it's in that surrender that I feel you become opened by to grace.
Right.
That you then become available to seeing how life is grace.
Right. Well, what did you say yesterday, which was really beautiful? Someone suggested that, you know, there's grace or there isn't. You've got grace or you haven't. And and that's not a view
you I said you're either cognizant of grace in your life or you're not.
Yes, but it's all grace.
And sure, on a relative human level, there's an awareness of a feeling of grace, of life being grace or not, and that's, you're either cognizant of that or not.
Yeah.
But it is all grace.
It's all
everything grace. That happens in life is grace. By the grace of God go we all. And so, you can be really unaware of that for sure. But there comes a point where the grace of life is revealed. The revelation of that is seen.
Well, I remember there was a certain point in my seeking, and that, you know, for a few years it was a lot of satsang. That was my go-to. And, you know, satsang is sort of synonymous in some ways to self-inquiry or spiritual inquiry, and sort of, and you were in satsang or you're at satsang. And then I remember something shifts later on as you get closer and closer to it, where you realize, just as you're saying, it's not a case of being in satsang here and there are lessons and there is an opportunity for reflection and life is offering. The whole of life is satsang.
Yeah.
You know, it's how could it be otherwise? That, and I remember years ago someone made the quote or said that, consider every event in your life as the direct communication of God with your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, taking on that attitude or recognizing that fact, arguably, changes everything.
There are
no mistakes anymore. Everything that occurs, everything, every breath, every blink of the eye, every interaction, everything becomes another way in which we are being called home.
Mm-hmm.
And to take it in that way is such an act of faith and trust and grace.
It is, and finally we're talking about sacrifice. Suddenly there is no sacrifice too great.
No.
For that.
No.
And actually, from that viewpoint, there is no sacrifice.
No. Because, you know, in giving it all up, you gain everything.
Exactly.
And that was my experience. I said, I remember the very end of my, you know, my seeking, was crowned by a deep prayer on my part, which was take everything. I'll hold nothing back. Whatever it takes, I have everything, all of me.
Yeah.
I hold nothing back. Genuinely, and getting to, you know, it's not something you can manufacture, that kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the earnestness that Nisargadatta used to talk about, you know, what characterizes a true seeker, earnestness. And, yeah, you know, you can describe and communicate that to a seeker, that's what's required, but you're not saying you need to become earnest. You will or you won't.
And they can, I mean, I've been around plenty of people, and actually at certain points myself would, that, you know, feel like you are being earnest.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is still, like, holding on to your sort of bag of
something.
Yeah.
You don't even know you're doing it.
No.
And so it's only at the very, at the very edge, you go, oh, really? And you come to a place where you're in complete surrender. You're in a condition of complete sacrifice. There's nothing, I'm done.
Yeah.
There's nothing that I want to hold on to here.
Yeah.
Take it all. Which is interesting, really, because I come from this, you know, in many ways, Advaita or yogic or Vedantic, Buddhist, even non-dual, you know, understanding. And yet to be at the very sort of end of my seeking, and it's sort of flourished by a prayer,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I just read, I was reading through my writing the other day, and the little phrase popped up. Prayer is the way of aligning your will with the divine's. So, entering into a prayerful relation with reality in yourself. I mean, I always found prayer to be an interesting take from a non-dual point of view. It can seem a little bit um, it can seem a little bit dualistic. But
that's who are you praying to is the question that comes up always. Yeah.
But nevertheless, the prayer is present. And
well, exactly.
So I you know, and if I enter into that kind of prayerful inner dialogue, and you follow it logically, you allow the prayer to follow logically. It goes something like, if you're asking God for something, you'll inevitably get to the point with, from, if you're sincere, of actually I don't even know, you know, and honestly you know best, you know better than I.
Yeah. You Life, know. You know better. Than
you know my heart.
Yeah.
You know what's right for me. You know what I need.
Yeah.
Who am I to ask the absolute for something specific that I think would be best?
And how do I know that that is what's best?
Exactly. You do. You know, it's thou knowest. So thank God, you know, the divine life, whatever it is, the universe.
Yeah.
But so it can become an internal dialogue that aligns you with the best we can hope for in terms of our own prayer is your will be done. Get me out of the way. I trust you entirely because I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
So I let you, and that's the kenotic movement of you know, the awakened life. You're just out of this, you don't get in the way. That's not personal.
Mm. I mean, this, you know, start of transmissions, I give a transmission, and the start of every transmission starts with a prayer.
Mm.
And effectively the prayer is, I give myself to this. Yeah. You know, the prayer is always around the person I'm giving this transmission to. But it is always about whatever is in their highest interest, whatever is for them. And the prayer always ends something to the effect of, I give myself entirely to this. Yeah. And it's like in that prayer is an emptying out of your individual self.
Yeah, kenosis.
It's an emptying. And it's the union with life.
That's the awakened, life is this, you know, yeah, it reminds me of the Jesus prayer before his, you know, before his passion was, if it be thy will, Father, let this cup pass away from me.
Mm.
But even so, thy will be done. So you might start off in like, oh, I wish it wasn't this way.
Yeah.
Oh, I really want this. But if you're sincere, if you're earnest, and if you sort of think that through and you go, you know best.
Yeah.
And
it's a surrender. It's a trust. It's a
surrender to trust.
It's a sacrifice of my will for thy will.
Not my will, but thy will be done. Yeah. And then the divine, the being that we are, the self, the Atma, whatever we want to, you know, whatever word we want, God, just acts out through this personal appearance.
Yeah.
You know, it's a description, you know, not my will, but thy will. Because there's no one left to...
Yeah.
By getting out of the way, in fact, you come to realize that you were never there as a person. It was and always is...
The divine.
The divine will act playing out, unfolding.
All of it.
All of it. All
Every...
of it.
Every...
But as you become,
drop.
You become where, you know, grace is in the case of grace or not grace. It's cognizant of it or not.
Exactly.
So coming into that awareness of
that it is already all the divine.
It is already.
It is all the play of the divine.
And I am that. Exactly. Tatvamasi. I am that. Thou art that. All this is that.
Yeah. The magnitude of that just... I don't know, brings tears to my eyes, actually. The splendor of that.
Yeah. What is God? What isn't God?
I don't know if I've ever said, I don't think I've said this story, but I once said that to some friends that came by. Some jokes.
Oh yeah, you did.
Friends that came by. No, they weren't friends. They were some in this country. We have, I'm sure, in other countries as well. But there's a history of Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on doors. Sure. And I remember we were house sitting, and you were. I think it was fairly early. You were still upstairs in bed, and the two women came and engaged in a conversation with me. And I was quite up for it.
Yeah. I used to talk with them for hours on the doorstep.
And I think they were taken aback by that, because normally most people in this sort of current climate and culture, not that, you know, welcoming. No. And yeah, we got into a conversation about God, and they asked me the question of, well, who do I think God is? Yeah. And I remember I said, well, I think the better question is, what isn't God?
Yeah.
And their faces. They quite quickly made their sort of
I don't think they expect to get in a theological discussion. No. They just want to leave a leaflet nowadays. I think
they don't really want to get into it. But, you know, that has been my viewpoint of that kind of discussion. That always comes back down to, well, what isn't?
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. And honestly, I think that's the big difference between the sort of dualistic religious worldview and the mystic realization.
Yeah.
Is the unity, the true unity of God, that all is God, and all, whether whatever tradition you find yourself in, whether it's,
and whatever
sort of
God, you know, the God is a very loaded word, but let's use it in the broadest,
the absolute
possible way that we possibly can here, the most encompassing viewpoint. Yeah,
and it's you know, and so it's interesting, you know, you see it in the. Sort of the Christian mystics, you know, they typically get there. They get to a sort of a non-dual perspective, but then of course half of them are burnt at the stake because the outer teaching is dualistic, and so to suggest that, you know, as Meister Eckhart, you know, the ground of God and the ground of the soul are the same ground.
Yeah.
You know, I think if he had lived a few more years, he probably would have been, you know, burned as a heretic, and some were. Were many kind of who ironically go to the fullness of the revelation of reality through their church and through their religion. You bypass the dualistic doctrine. You find yourself in a mystic realization.
Yeah,
and
that's
unified.
And not God as the person, but God as being itself.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, there's where I part ways with most religions, is God as a person.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting, I do find that.
Or rather, God only as a person.
Yeah, I know. There's a whole theological thing around that, which I'm still haven't quite got my. I don't know quite what to make of it, and it's varied as well. You know, I think if you take something like the Christian tradition throughout the ages, from, you know, the early desert fathers to, you know, the Protestant Revolution and beyond, and all the different churches, there's such a range of understanding about what that really means to be God, a person, a personal God, or as opposed to something like you know, the Hindu view or the Vedic view of, you know, Brahman as in a sense, a sort of a an awake consciousness, but not a person, not personal as such.
A divine intelligence of life.
So it's deism versus theism. It's a sort of a different sort of theological view. But I love that. I mean, my answer to it is the Meister Eckhart quote: "Theologians may quarrel, but the mystics of the world all speak the same language."
Didn't we say that in last?
Yeah. maybe. Oh, I like it. Say it again. So that, but that actually speaks to,
yeah,
you know, don't get caught, you know, seek the mystic realization, seek the experience of the unified ground of being. Then all distinctions between God and other and
are irrelevant. Self
are just dissolve in singularity.
They do. This is the quest of awakening to me.
Yeah.
It's not about achieving or knowing or gaining or any of this. It is the union with the beloved. And you are that beloved.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the sort of dissolution of the notional boundaries that appear to exist that don't really. No.
There's just one unending, undulating, kaleidoscopic ocean of experiencing. Never to be separated. Yet always to be experienced.
Yeah.
We are all of it. There is nothing that isn't it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's the viewpoint. And if you take that viewpoint to heart, as a seeker, if you take that viewpoint to heart, you know, you pick up a glass of water and go, this is God, this is mm-hmm. consciousness, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how, you know, the ground of reality shows up right now.
This is the play of life.
This is it. And everything your awareness touches is made of awareness. Divine consciousness, spirit, whatever you want to call it. It's all that. And then before you know it, you know, you realize that this being, this experiencing is all one substance. What does Ken Wilber call it? One taste. It's nothing but consciousness, nothing but spirit. And that becomes the living reality. So there's no separate things existing within it, you know, against a backdrop of empty space. That's the illusion. It's just one fabric, one tapestry of being, made of being. Okay, I think today, given our... what's the word? Recovery. We're going to wrap it up for today. And we'll see you next week. Have a beautiful, fulfilling week, everyone, until we are here again.
From our heart to yours.
Bye for now.